Hi, before we get started, a couple of quick notes. First, this conversation was recorded on Wednesday, May 27th, which is before all of the protests had really broken out. I think had we recorded this week, some of this conversation would be a little bit different, but Mark offers a lot of insights around marketing with brand purpose that I think are applicable in this challenging time. Second, speaking of challenging, we had a little echo during this recording, so please bear with us during the annoying bits. Okay, let's get started. I'm Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I have the privilege and the honor of speaking with Mark McIntyre. He is head of marketing at Fuse Media. Hello, Mark. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. So let's just lay a little foundation for this conversation. Why don't you remind us all what Fuse Media is, where all we can tune into Fuse, and then what demographics you target, because I know you guys are pretty precise about it, and what's your programming focus? It's four questions in one, so good luck.
Well, we're a nationally distributed cross-platform entertainment brand, and our focus is we create empowering culture-based programming and content that celebrates talent, activists, and creators, people who break boundaries, people who celebrate life, and people who fuel hope for a world seeking unity. And we're aimed at 18 to 34-year-old millennial and Gen Z audience. And we deliver our content through really one of four verticals. Music culture, which we define as artists who move music and the culture forward. Or style identity, which is the intersection of culture and self-expression. Entrepreneurship, which are people who are driven by passion and impact. Or social responsibility, which is conversations about social issues, which for our audience as a multicultural and Latinx audience is a must. And some of the social issues tend to be either political, social, or economic.
How long has that been your brand mission? Because that's all very precise.
It is specific. Because we serve the multicultural audience that we talk about, inclusion and representation have always been in our DNA. But as a result of the research, some of which we're probably talking about today, we started seeing this additional new definition of empowerment, which we also rolled into our definition of the brand once we realized how important empowerment as a topic is to our audience. And then we honed our content guardrails a little tighter in order to hit that on the nose.
When you talk about this we will definitely talk about in the study, but let's do that. Let's go to the study because these questions about empowerment will flow naturally from the study. You guys just released, or you're in the process of releasing a study. I know that you've done these in other years too, because I've reported on them, but the study was called Empowerment, Going Beyond Representation and Inclusion. And it found that brands can have a positive impact on their businesses by offering messages of empowerment to young consumers. So, A, why is empowerment and the theme of empowerment so important to these young adults? And then what do those messages of empowerment look like when they're coming from brands?
Well, let's first of all talk about the first part about what does empowerment mean. As I talked about a little bit, we saw it changing with younger millennials and older Gen Z. The new definition is really the act of taking a public stance to build confidence and support issues to level the playing field for all. Because there's a big desire among the audience for a drive toward unity and equal opportunity. And that's where the empowerment conversation really comes in. Because empowerment used to be something that was given or something that was taken. And now empowerment is a reciprocal relationship between customer and brand, or in our case, audience and brand.
That means what? That means that empowerment is something that is everybody sort of owns, and then they link into through your brand, or what? How does empowerment link your brand and your viewer?
Empowerment is the result, really, of inclusion and representation, as I said, and that came out in the study. And then, what empowerment means is that we provide a voice. We use our brand power to champion issues that are important to our audience, to take on issues or situations that our audience feels passionate about, and to champion other people who are using their voice to also advocate for a level playing field. That's where things like some of our social responsibility programs come into play.
I mean, what are some of the other findings that from the research and around empowerment and around what Gen Z and millennials are looking for?
Through the research, we learned that what consumers really want is a reciprocal relationship with a brand, and they want a brand that's really a partner, and a partner that takes an active role in helping them and using their brand power to give voice to things that they're important about. You know, from a brand perspective, we know what the brand wants. The brand wants consumer activists and customers, and what the customer wants is recognition that they understand who the customer is and will help them achieve their goals. So it's now a reciprocal relationship, and that's something very new. We also learned that when that construction, when that empowering construction happens, consumers are very much become brand advocates for brands recommend buying their services and recommending them to other people. So it, for brands that have built that relationship, there's a very strong economic impact of understanding and building that empowering relationship. And that became very clear in the survey. One of the things we also learned is the need to have that an empowering relationship by brand is also, there's a little correlation between how loud the brand or category is and the expectation of the consumer. You know, very loud sports brands, very loud cosmetic brands in particular, there's an expectation that they're also going to be representative of all people. I think brands like Fenty always come up in our research because they advocate products for all women of all sizes and all ethnicities equally, and they get very high marks in the empowerment survey for that reason.
Let's start with what Fuse is doing, because you guys do a lot of campaigns and content around this. So, but let's talk about some of the, not so much the on the programming side, but on the marketing side, let's talk a little bit about the campaigns that you guys have put into place to sort of draw on those concepts. So one is Future History. That's been in a place for a couple of years, right? But you guys really expanded it this year?
That's correct. Future History as an idea has been around for a few years. And the idea of the Future History is that we talk about people who are using their voice right now to drive change, who we believe have risen to a level that they will be talked about in the future. So we took a look at what Future History was, and then internally we put a lot of rigor behind it and really revamped how we would take Future History forward. We formed an internal committee, Future History Committee, that's comprised of members of every department of Fuse, and they meet and they decide who we think is breaking through, who should be nominated, what the campaign should look like, and they bring that back. So we have an our side inclusion of our entire organization to build the Future History campaign. And while we really represent, you know, all people at all times, when the culture is highlighting a certain group like Future Women's History or Future Black History, right now we're in the middle of, or toward the end now, of Future Asian Pacific History, and next month we'll be in Future LGBTQ History for Pride Month. When the culture is raising a group up for focus, we come in with a Future History campaign at that time and put our voice into what that effort is. And then, of course, later in the year, we'll have Future Hispanic History that coincides with Future with Hispanic Heritage Month,
which is September. Yeah, you guys started with Future Black History and Future Women's History, and then have expanded from there.
Originally, we started with Future Black History, Future Women's History, and Future Hispanic History, and have expanded from there. From there, we've added Asian Pacific, we added LGBTQ, and that's sort of rounded out the platform for now.
And then as you guys have expanded it out, what has been the reaction to people? And are people pretty comfortable with the different emphases that you put on these different groups?
Yeah, because it's very celebratory, because we honor people for the work they've done to drive a difference. And it's not a voting mechanism, it's an honoring mechanism. And we actually honed it down to where we do 4 people per month. So we're going to have a class of 2020 Future History leaders at the end of this year. And the idea ongoing is every year we'll have a class of 20, a class of 21. And then as time goes on, we'll be able to look back and see what their impact, what it is today. In the future, we can say what it was and how it has and what transformation has become as a result of that. But that's in the future. For right now, Future History is 4 recipients per month, and they run the gamut. There are artists, there are activists, there are fashion people, there are creators, there are actors. But it's not just being known for their craft. It's being known for not beyond their craft, what they do with their voice that truly drives impact.
Do you guys take nominations like from your social media platforms and other places, or do these all come from internal suggestions?
They've all come. Well, we have an internal committee, and they come from the suggestions of the committee, because, you know, we have a extremely diverse employee population base at Fuse. So they're very active in the community. So they come internally, the committee brings nominees in, and from that they hone it down to the four they want to recognize. Mm-hmm. And then they bring it to the brand creative team and senior management. We sign off on it. But it's really, I feel like our employee base is so connected to the culture that, mm-hmm. and they also very representative of the audience, that listening to the internal voice for who they're hearing out is probably the more active way.
As you have brought those different community leaders to the forefront in these different campaigns, how has your audience reacted on your social media channels and other ways in which they're interacting with you? What kind of feedback have you gotten?
Oh, we've gotten great feedback. Most of the recipients have gone into social media to promote that they've been nominated, and they mm-hmm. promote the creative, which is great. We get a lot of activity across Instagram and Facebook and our social platforms, appreciative and supportive and celebratory for the activity that we're doing and for the voice that we're bringing forward. It's been really strong. We've gotten really strong press support too for the same reason.
I know that having posted some of these myself, you have really great assets for these. Do you provide that to these people that you're honoring so that they can put them on their own social channels?
Absolutely. In most cases, we reach out to the people that we're going to honor, and we ask them if they'd like to provide us assets to use for the animation that we're doing, which they generally do. And then we create them in-house, and then we send them back and for posting or whatever use they'd like to do with them. We're so proud of it. And having the support of the recipient is also really important to us.
And then all that animation is done in-house. You don't have any agency input on that?
No, it's all done in-house. It's great, especially right now with COVID. Creative team is split between Los Angeles and New York. Well, actually, Glendale and New York. And they actually work hand in hand to build those because my motion graphics team is actually in New York. So a lot of the work is done for those because they're animated by the motion graphics team. All the animation work for the faces and the backgrounds is done by the Flat creative team in Los Angeles. So they've come together in a really strong way to make those really special spots.
Yeah, I've posted some of these before, but I'll do some links in here or post some of the videos so people can see what the animation and stuff looks like and get a feel for the campaign, because it's a really cool idea and it definitely has a very specific and eye-catching look. So I think it's worth checking out.
I'm very proud of the work they've done.
Yeah, it's great. All right, let's switch over to Be Change. So the Be Change campaign you rolled out more this year, correct?
Yeah, Be Change, we rolled out. We did a soft launch of it last year, but we really gave it rigor and launched it this year. Our original plan was to launch it around Earth Day, but then when COVID hit, the committee came together and decided one of the big platforms for Be Change is mental health. So they mm-hmm. felt that with COVID, the need to reach out to people to be connected had mental health implications. So we actually ran very quickly and ended up launching it against the COVID crisis with a campaign called Be Change, Be Home. It has a very specific construction. We give our audience tools to take positive action to drive positive change. So the first, it was funny because the first one we did was Be Change, Be Home, where the action we wanted to take was to do no action at all. It was important at that moment in time. And then the Be Change campaign against COVID has gone through four different waves. The first was Be Change, Be Home, be part of the solution. The second one was Be Change, Be Connected. Because where mental health is concerned, two things. We encourage people to reach out to others and connect with other people. First of all, it helps the other people through connection not be isolated, and it helps the individual who might feel isolated be connected to other people. And then we're wrapping right now with the fourth one of the campaign, which is Be Change, Be Thankful. Where beyond truly the first responders, the nurses, yes, be thankful, but also be thankful for everyone who's participated to help, help you live your life during this crisis, whether that's your FedEx driver, whether that's the clerk at your grocery store, all the people who have put in time and effort during this time to make people's lives easier. And that we're excited about that campaign, Be Home, Be Thankful, because that's actually being sponsored by Tide Loads of Hope.
So it's interesting because I was researching this a little and I was noticing that the Be Change, I think it came out in March, and when you ended up launching it, you had the Be Home component. So how quickly did you realize you needed to pivot, and then how quickly were you able to make that happen and roll out the campaign?
I will tell you that the committee met right before, we were still in the office, right before we left, and that pivot happened in probably 48 hours because it came out of the first committee meeting. We had charged them with starting with Thursday, but they came back and said, no, we think we need to start now. So literally 48 hours after the first committee meeting, the first scripts were done and the first creative was started, and it was probably out maybe a week later. So it came very, the first one came very, very quickly.
But you already had some creative in the works around Be Change, yes?
No, we did not, actually. We had a logo.
Wow.
And we had an idea. We had a logo and we had an idea. That's all we had. I think one of the things that's allowed us to be nimble is because we have an internal crew that can turn these kinds of campaigns around quickly.
Yeah, that's real nimble. What was the campaign going to be had it been around Earth Day?
Well, we did win around Earth Day, but it was an Earth responsibility campaign.
I think a lot of people had to change campaigns around Earth Day, actually. And then now you're in the probably in the midst of Be Thankful, and then you're planning to wrap, but do you plan to do anything else with Be Change in months from now or next year?
Oh yeah, one of the fun things that came out of Be Change also is we had some legislators from Washington. We had senators and congresspeople who wanted to provide tapes. So we actually did a version of it where we have two camera video from congressmen and senators encouraging people to stay home. We did that as a side campaign to our Be Home campaign. And that kind of two camera construction will go forward as part of this campaign. Next up for Be Change, we're going to celebrate or do a campaign around the anniversary for the ADA, which is coming up on its 30th anniversary. We have one coming up this month for Be Change, Be Pride.
Mm-hmm.
Because as part of that campaign, they took the 12-month moratorium on gay men donating blood or plasma and lowered it to 3 months as a response to the COVID crisis for plasma donors. So that campaign is around encouraging people to use their voice actively to encourage that ban be lifted permanently.
Do you feel like once you guys sort of narrowed this brand mission down, that it's had the result of kind of expanding the subject matter that you could dive into? Because it sounds like you've really gotten to at like the 30-year anniversary of the ADA, or what you just explained about gay men being able to donate blood. Like, it's allowed you to kind of both broaden your content, but also get really specific.
Well, a lot of that's true. And a lot of it's because the result of when I talk about the conversations we have with the audience at all times, because we understand what's important to them, we also understand what issues that they ask us to involve and take our larger brand voice into. So yeah, two things. I think honing down the brand mission that we did and putting the guardrails around the content and defining what social responsibility platforms are important to Fuse's audience really helped. We learned that social responsibility, mental health, and social justice were the three top issues that our audience cared about the most. So we sort of took Be Change and aimed it in those directions, which is why we started with the mental health aspect of the COVID crisis, why we've talked about where social justice is concerned, ADA, because the audience actually defined physically challenged people as the people most in the need of empowerment through the survey. So we chose that one. We will also be taking Be Change into obviously September, November around the election. We'll be coming in September with a campaign around registering to vote. And then we'll come back in November with a Be Counted campaign that's encouraging people to actually vote. And we will do that in partner with one or two organizations that we're talking to right now, because we also want to give them the tools of how, when, and why to vote.
Okay, that's great. All right. So one thing that you said, that Fuse said in the press release around the study that we talked about a little bit earlier, was that problems arise for brands perceived to be trying too hard or inauthentically, thus being seen as disempowering to potential brand champions. When you guys have been doing this, how are you avoiding those pitfalls, that possibility of being seen as inauthentic? How do you make sure that the messages you're putting out there are landing with your audience?
I think the success has been that the campaigns are rooted in strong internal rigor with those campaigns, because there are committees that make them up actually represent the breadth of our audience. They bring an authentic viewpoint culture by culture into that room where they're making these decisions. Mm-hmm. So first of all, we take that into consideration. Then when scripts and creative is done, the creative and scripts go back to that committee, as do social media posts, any communication, and they review it as a whole. And then once everyone's on board, then we start distributing the message. So I think we have a strong internal process for ensuring that we come across as authentic to the audience and that we read how and where they want to be messaged to.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have internal people to bounce off of how that community might respond to it. So in case, because I feel like, you know, there's lots of examples you can cite of brands trying to do this type of thing and then it being really off-putting and they didn't, I don't think they did apply the internal rigor. Maybe that was necessary. But if you've got people internally that are from these communities, you can really get, from your perspective, does this land?
Yeah, I think that's where our strongest learning has been. Because like in these particular cases, senior management steps out of the way. We put together a group of people who are, you know, both from an age and diversity standpoint, representative of our audience, and we ask them to represent the audience in campaigns that they make that we want to take back as a voice as the brand. And it's proven to be a really strong
approach
that has, yeah, that's been well received by all of our audiences. So,
is there a system there that you could take to other brands who are wanting to be in this brand purpose camp? Because we did a webinar a couple weeks ago, which was sort of about this, which was similar to this, which was looking at Gen Z and what their brand values were. And it sort of touched on this idea of, you know, that they do really respond to this type of empowerment message, brand purpose, et cetera, but it can be risky. But it sounds like what you guys have put in place is a very strong system so that you, to avoid that. But is there, are there any recommendations you would give to brands who wanted to do this kind of messaging and from your own learning?
The first thing I would tell a brand to do is look internal first. They have to be in a place where their employee population, the people making decisions, are share the same diversity as the audience they want to attract. Because what we learned, especially in my younger millennials and older Gen Z, they're smart. You know, they're checking out companies, they're checking out who's making creative decisions, they're checking out the authenticity of the messaging. And by looking internally first, I think it pulls in, your employee base knows your employee, it should know, your company mission. So if they couple what they know that their peers and their peers care about, coupled with what your company mission is, they should be the strongest advocates for creating first messaging ideas and bringing them to the table. And then always stress test your creative.
And I think people get in a hurry and maybe don't do that.
I think sometimes I think people reach outside, which is fine, but they don't do internal stress tests before they release. That's where I've seen problems arise.
I think the other thing you said that's key and that I think also requires rigor, which you mentioned before, but which is making sure that your employee base is representative of the audience that you're trying to reach. So you're hiring with diversity and inclusion and representation in mind. So then when you're coming to audiences from this perspective, you are legitimately authentic because that's who's creating the messaging.
We spend a lot of time making sure that we are, that we're considered of the culture, not looking through the window into the culture.
Yeah, definitely. How long did it take you guys to get that in place? Like once you did you already have that employee base in place when you honed your brand purpose, or is that something that you've done since then?
No, the employee base was already in place. I mean, Fuse has a long history of having a diverse, strong employee base. Mm-hmm. I think what honed it was really sitting down from a brand perspective and talking about what it is that we want to, that we want Fuse to mean to the viewer, and then bringing the employees in together, explaining to them what it is that we want to achieve, and taking everybody's viewpoint and input to help really, you know, edit and hone that messaging.
Well, that's another challenge that I think people take for granted that you just said, which is taking everybody's viewpoint into consideration.
You know, it's interesting. We just did, the same way that we do the empowerment study externally, we also did the empowerment study internally in our among our employee base, so we could learn mm-hmm. how our employees feel about Fuse. And one of the things that came out in that study was they feel that their opinion makes a difference. They feel that we listen to them. They feel that their effort has impact on the brand and the brand direction, and it enhances, and they find strong work satisfaction because they actually see and feel that. And I think that's the message that other companies could take.
Agreed, 100%. Absolutely. I'm going to go back to the COVID conversation a little bit. So you guys are wrapping up the Be Thankful portion of the campaign. Are you guys now going to sort of wrap up your COVID-related messaging? Or do you feel like there's more to say? Or do you think people are a little bit exhausted around COVID messaging?
That's a big internal conversation right now. I think we'll read the conversation about 2 weeks and then see what we need to say next. And frankly, we'll see if we need to say anything next. I think mm-hmm. we're in a moment right now where different areas of the country are opening. People's lives are changing again differently. We went through 8 weeks where everyone had the same experiences, as everyone had to stay home. So everyone's experience was pretty much the same. Everyone was locked down. Everyone was in a secure location and there was no external interaction. Now that that's changing city by city, moment by moment, depending on state and government, I think we need to read that there's a rising overall sentiment that for which we can provide tools for people through the Be Change construction. If we find that that exists, then we'll create the next message for it. And if we find that the messages are now disparate between places like New York that are closed and places like Arizona that are open, we may not find that there's a national conversation to have. I just don't know right now. This is all changing so quickly. I think we'll know in the next probably. I think we'll probably know more in the next 2 weeks, and then we'll make an assessment and we'll run from there.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely is changing quickly all the time. This is a question I've been asking a lot of people, which is, what have you seen happen inside of Fuse and even externally in the entertainment industry as a result of COVID and the pandemic and the quarantine that you think might actually stick around afterwards? That's a change that has been made that is to the benefit of the industry.
It's really funny. I think the whole concept of work time is what's changing. People are adjusting their work schedules to deadline and need versus clock and office, which I find very interesting, because as projects are going through, you know, people are, especially when you're home, you've got other distractions at times that need your attention. But if there's a deadline, I'm finding people are working completely differently and faster on certain projects, which I find interesting. And I think there'll be a lot more flexibility for where people work from after this, because one of the big learnings across the board, I think, for every company is that in this age of technology, this idea of the ability to be remote has proven to be successful. Even when you look at what we've achieved through our Be Change Creative and our Future History Creative working on two coasts, our Lisa and the press department are here, the creators are in Glendale and New York City and some in New Jersey, yet it's all going at a lightning speed pace. And it's actually been a little faster and a little more successful with everybody honed in than even face-to-face communication. I also think the interest in a brainstorming, what I see when I'm doing brainstorming with brand creative people, is if you put the expectation out, people come to the table prepared a little deeper when they're working from home than they are when they're in an office environment, which I just find sort of fascinating. Because they've taken time to think about it, and strangely, Zoom is the great equalizer. Because there's no hierarchy in all those little tiny pictures on Zoom. So everyone feels a little more comfortable speaking, but they also have the responsibility to speak in the conversation. So I find that people are coming a little more prepared, which is actually helping drive speed into some of the creative processes I'm seeing.
Do you think that's because they have more time, or because when the Zoom time comes for them to talk, their window gets bigger? Or is there any other reasons why you think that? Are they more distracted in the office? What would be the reasons that people would be more prepared?
I think sometimes when you're doing a face-to-face brainstorming, for example, you tell people you're going to brainstorm around, they get distracted by what's on their computer in the side conversation, they run to the room, then they enter the conversation. When you've put it out in advance and they know there's going to be a Zoom call at 2:00 and you've asked everyone to come prepared, I think they may have thought about a viewpoint a little bit more, and they're a little more, some of my people can take more time and are a little more articulate in explaining their viewpoint because they've thought about it just a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you get more robust information in that meeting, and therefore, I think the results are even better.
That's good news and bad news, since you and I, before we got on air, discussed how my feelings about always being on Zoom video, but I'm trying to embrace it with love.
Well, I'm right there with you. Well, you know, then the good answer there is those Zoom calls are actually a little shorter than they would have been if people weren't as prepared.
True. Has it surprised you? I mean, frankly, it's kind of surprising me. Has it surprised you how agile and flexible your people have been able to be during this? Like, for example, the fact that you were able to put out that initial Be Change, Be Home campaign as quickly as you were seems very impressive.
I have, frankly, been floored. We haven't missed a deadline. We haven't missed a deadline. Now, in Fuse's case, because we're split between Glendale and Los Angeles, I mean, Glendale and New York, we've been used to be working a little bit remote by team, but not by location. But I've actually been floored at how smoothly it has all gone. And I think it's a testament to how people have really diving in and paying attention and everyone's pulling their own weight. It's I've honestly been very, very, very pleasantly surprised because I thought there would be more technical glitches and we hadn't had very many. I thought there would have been you know, some time constraint problems, but there really haven't been. I worry sometimes that people are actually working either earlier or later than they would in an office, in a clock, sort of a clocked office environment. But I've actually been very, very surprised how seamless it has been.
Yeah, it is. It has been a time of like, this is a challenging time, but also technology has been amazing. And it's been incredible to watch what people can do and what they can innovate, you know, during this time of challenge. All right, so getting toward the end, but the other thing I wanted to ask you about was a question that I kind of skipped over along the way. But, you know, with your audience of Gen Zs and millennials, and so I don't want to say social justice warriors, but very social justice tuned in. How have you found that they've been responding to Fuse during this time? And where are you finding them? Like, what platforms are you finding them on?
Yeah, well, we're very active on social media.
As you like have to be, if those are your target demographics. Yeah.
And like most brands, we've seen an uptick in viewership on Fuse the Mothership. We've seen an uptick in time spent on our social platforms and our digital platforms and also our YouTube platforms. We find them in all of those places, and then we do our best to move them around, and we do our best to communicate with them and encourage them to have a reciprocal conversation with us.
How do you move them around?
On social media, Be Change. We go into Be Change and we talk about what we want them to do. For tools, we send them to fuse.tv to learn more, or we send them to a partner. On air, if we're doing premieres or programming on Fuse and we have additional content or shorts related to that content, we push them to other platforms to have more Fuse experiences that are, you know, really honed to that platform. So we move people where we can from platform to platform. I think the key there is understanding what they want and providing it in time frame pieces that are appropriate for the platform on which they're accessing it.
Okay. So it's sort of it ends up being like a, I don't know about a 360 degree approach, but more like 360 degree distribution of audience or access to audience?
Well, it's a little bit of both. We are a 360 approach for how we find, maintain, and grow our audience bases. And then from a marketing standpoint, it's a 360 approach to how we use, you know, appropriate messages by platform to have us access something we may be doing on another platform that we think they'll be interested in.
How many TikTok videos have you done while you have been in quarantine?
Oh, I couldn't begin to answer that question.
Sort of joking.
I could ask Lisa to talk to the digital team and they come back and answer it for you.
But so you guys are, I mean, I was sort of joking, but is that a platform that you guys have seen on the rise during this and for Fuse specifically?
Yeah, you know, we've really begun experimenting and diving into the TikTok platform for the last little while. And Instagram stories tend to be really, really really strong for us. And we get a lot of reaction to content on that platform. And our YouTube, our ASMR shows that run, Mind Massage that runs on YouTube, continues to be very, very strong because it's artist-based. And ASMR itself has its own audience that finds, and we're a leader in the ASMR space because we were sort of first in. So every time we put new ASMR videos up on our YouTube channel, it gets tons of views.
And all of that is video. Are you doing any like Instagram lives since you have those artists and, you know, in your wheelhouse? Are you taking advantage of any of those live platforms?
Yeah, our content team is working on what we call quarantine format, so which you'll see pop up, where we've taken some of the same kind of content that we make, and they're working on figuring out how to release it in very rapid turnaround as other people are.
All right, last question, which is, what are you looking forward to in terms of what Fuse can do post-quarantine?
I think as we head into the summer, and especially head into the fall, some of the productions, some of the shows that we're going to release in the fall and the summer have moved clearly to the fall like everyone else because of the disruption in production. Mm-hmm. But we have a very robust fall season coming, some season twos and some hits and some new shows. And I'm really excited to see how those, you know, to watch them grow and perform because some of them have showed very strong reception in their first season and we're getting very excited for season two for them.
Yeah, I think people are ready to move into that sort of new yet familiar content.
And I also think right now, when we come out of this, people are going to want to laugh. People are going to be looking for entertainment. There's been a lot of serious news every single day for a long period of time. And I think for brands like Fuse that provide a whole lot of good escapist content, I think they'll be looking for that. I think people will be looking for an escape. I think they'll be looking to laugh. And I think they'll be looking for humor. And you know, we provide a lot of that at Fuse.
I'm looking for that now, so send any over that you've got.
So I get to count you as a viewer, is what you're telling me.
Yes, send it over. I will view. All right. Well, Mark, thank you so very much. I appreciate it. And thank you for sharing all this helpful information. And I will definitely post up some of these campaigns so people can check them out.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day. Thank you.
Okay. Stay safe.
Bye. Thank you to Fuse Media Head of Marketing, Mark McIntyre, which is extremely hard to say, for joining me today. And thank you to Video Helper, as always, for providing the music. We'd love to hear your thoughts about brand purpose and anything else you want to bring up to us. And so please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram at @Promax_Global or on Facebook or LinkedIn at Promax Global. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have an idea for a conversation, please reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.